So today, we return to the story, and remember, we use the word story loosely here, because when we say story, we tend to mean things that we have made up, right? Although sometimes we say, I want to tell you a story about something, and it's a true story that comes from our life, but that's one of the key things to remember, especially today. Because as we get into our reading today, as we come back to the story, I'm going to give you just a quick update. All right, we read through the first five books of the Bible the last time that we were working on the story. We went all the way from creation into God raising up a nation full of people. They had gone into Egypt for safety. Then they ended up in slavery in Egypt. God rescued them, brought them out into the desert. And only three people had enough faith in God to believe that God would actually take them into the promised land that he had promised to them. One was Moses, their leader, and the other two were two, at that point in time, young men named Joshua and Caleb. And everybody else in their generation was afraid to go in, and so they spent 40 years wandering in the desert, waiting for that generation to finish their lifespan, so that only those of the next generation could go in. And Joshua and Caleb were the only two from that generation who got to go into the promised land. Even Moses, if you remember from our 5 weeks ago when we ended the story before, Moses died on the other side of the Jordan River before crossing over into the land God had promised to his people. And so today, the torch passes to Joshua. And in it, we find three amazing things. First of all, we find Joshua, who is one of the few glowing examples of faithful people in the Old Testament or in the entire Bible. Second of all, we find an event that is so miraculous to this very day, there are Discovery Channel specials debating whether or not it was possible for it to actually happen on physical terms. And last but not least, and maybe one of the greatest and most challenging things about reading this section of the Bible for us in our modern ears is that there's some challenging ethical questions when we take a look at what happened during this time of conquest as Joshua led God's people into the Holy Land and some of the interesting commands that God gave to them concerning these people whose land they were overtaking. Well, let's begin with the man of faith, with Joshua. In Numbers chapter 14, we start out here. Oh, there we go. Numbers chapter 14, we get some background, and we're reminded of this, that Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jehumuthah, were among those who had explored the land, right? Moses chose 12 people, one man from every tribe, to go in as spies and see what the land was all about. And Joshua and Caleb came back, and everyone was afraid to go in. And Joshua and Caleb tore their clothes. That's an ancient expression of anger and frustration. Right? And said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land that we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." All right, Joshua, from an early age, was a young man who was committed to the Lord, who trusted in him. Joshua has quite an interesting background himself, because he would have been born and raised as a slave in Egypt. And then he made his way out into the desert with Moses. He walked through the Red Sea as it was parted and walked through on dry land. Incredible, he was able to be a part of those events, perhaps shaping his experience. Right? Because every time we go through, God brings us through a challenge in our life. He does that for a reason. He does this to remind us that the next time a challenge comes along, we can be quicker to trust in him. Because he was with us last time, and he will bring us through the present challenge as well. And so Joshua was a part of that. Joshua was also a part, even at a young age, when they began to encounter other people. They encountered a bunch of people called the Amalekites that were hostile towards God's people. And Joshua was one of the military leaders in that battle. And he experienced great victory at that time because this was before everyone else had fallen in their faith and their trust in God, and God was with them. And so Joshua had a chance to see what it looked like when God went to battle on behalf of his people, thus strengthening his faith. And notice, all throughout this response, right, Joshua isn't claiming that he's a great military leader. He's not saying that the Israelites are mighty warriors. He's saying that God will do it. And he reminds us that's where it begins. Section 2 in your outline says this. Important to remember, this is God's mission. It is not man's mission with God's support. And that might seem like a subtle distinction. But you see, this is not the idea of the Israelites. Here's what we're going to do. Let's go and pray and ask God if he will make that happen. It's quite the opposite. All along the way, this has been God's idea. It's been his plan. It's been his promise to them for over 400 years. Think about it, that's a long time. Right? This plan is much bigger than any of these people, than any of these individuals. It comes from outside of them. It's God's plan with the agreement of his people, not people's plan with the agreement of their God. And I point that out because as they encounter these other people living in that area, that's how those people viewed everything they did. Everything was their idea, and if they sacrificed enough, then God would go along with it. You see, but God's people, the real God, works in a completely different way. He's the one that initiates, and what he asks of us is to follow along. So in Joshua chapter 1, it says this, Moses, my servant, is dead. He says, now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give to them. Notice it's all coming from God. It says, to the Israelites, I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised to Moses. Right again, it's bigger than them. He says, your territory will be extended from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, and all the Hittite country to the Mediterranean Sea to the west. He's basically describing everything that today comprises Israel, Palestine, Lebanon, that entire chunk of the Middle East is what he's describing to them. All of it is going to be theirs. He says this, no one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. And then he says, why? He says, as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you or forsake you. And then he says, be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give to them. This is a passage we use a lot in our lives. In confirmation time, numerous kids get to share different fractions of this one chapter, because there are so many amazing promises from God in this chapter. As a matter of fact, that phrase, be strong and courageous, is repeated at least four times by God. And then one time, the people of Israel tell that to Joshua. All right, why is he supposed to be strong and courageous? Because he's incredibly gifted? Because he's incredibly talented? No, because God has promised to be with him. His strength comes from trusting in the one who gives strength. Right, this all begins with God. That's a key piece of this phrase. One of the amazing things that happens, always sticks out, maybe you giggle over it, maybe you don't read this chapter with your kids because of these things, but they encounter a woman. You see, Joshua was a part of those 12 spies who were sent into the land originally, and so this time, right, two of them came back faithful, Joshua and Caleb. So this time he only sends two faithful spies, to go and spy out the land. And they encounter a woman named Rahab, who happens to be a prostitute. And here's what she has to say from the Jericho side of the perspective. What people in Jericho are thinking about what's about to happen. She says this. She said to them, I know that the Lord has given you this land, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. Isn't that funny? Sometimes we're afraid to follow God because we think he's not big enough. Right? One of my favorite phrases from a couple of months ago as you're reading in the story is God's arm not long enough or not strong enough to accomplish what he promises. And we often doubt that. The spies are in the land because they have at least a little bit of doubt. Right, and they're working on some strategy, and they go in, they talk to a local, and that is the advice that they get. That the locals are afraid of God's people because they are aware that he is a great and powerful God. They know the stories that the Israelites seem to forget. They know the story about how they were led out of Egypt because all those people died in Egypt and that they were led through the Red Sea. They know the story already they've heard about some of the battles that they have been winning across the Jordan. Right, the word is coming to them. They have already heard about how they crossed over on dry land. Sometimes we forget the amazing things that God does in our life. But don't be fooled, because people around take notice of what is happening, and they begin to see that, in fact, God is with us. Incredible background of what's taking place here. That other people are recognizing God is behind this mission. It's not just a people's idea. And of course, it's bigger than them. But before we get on to that exciting part of the marching around the city, I think we need to deal with the elephant in the room, this question of war. It's interesting, as we take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 20, God gives some very odd instructions to his people before they go in to the promised land. He says this, he says, when you go to war against your enemies and see horses and chariots, notice that first, and an army greater than yours, do not be afraid of them, because the Lord your God who brought you up out of Egypt will be with you. Notice again, even before the instructions, he reminds them not to be afraid, that he is the one who is behind all these things. And notice some of the details there. He mentions horses and chariots. The Israelites, God's people, had neither of those two things. They didn't have any horses, and God's people were a Bronze Age people. They did not have iron, and they did not have chariots. They were outclassed in every way by the people they were going in to overtake. Just let that set in for a minute. All right, not only were they bigger, not only were they stronger, they had better technology. All right, you can look this up on Wikipedia. It's called The Collapse of the Bronze Age. It was perpetrated by God's people. They did not have the technology of some of these people they were going up against. And yet God told them not to be concerned about that, not to be impressed by the things that look powerful, but to instead be impressed by him. He comes to this interesting command. He says, however, in the cities of the nations the Lord your God is giving to you as an inheritance, the places they are supposed to inhabit, he says this, do not leave alive anything that breathes. He says, completely destroy them. The Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hittites, the Jebusites. Yes, I had to rehearse that. As the Lord your God has commanded you. He says, otherwise, and here's the reason. Right? He talks about complete destruction. This is essentially total war, although God tells them not to destroy the soil. That's important. Right? In Deuteronomy, he says, if you lay siege to a city, don't cut down the trees around the outside. He says, eat the fruit off of those trees. Right? Be smart about it. But oddly enough, he says they're supposed to kill everything that lives and breathes. Is that offensive at all to us? That seems wasteful, doesn't it? And yes, he does go into detail in other chapters about, yes, men, women, children, everything must go. And in verse 18, he tells us why. He says, otherwise, they will teach you to follow the detestable things which they do and worship their gods, and you will sin against the Lord your God. This is not one culture overtaking another. That's not what this is about. What this is about is holiness coming into a very unholy territory. For hundreds, maybe 1,000 years, at least hundreds of years, secular scholars have suggested that no culture on earth ever sacrificed people, and especially children, to their gods. Right? Because that's so detestable to us. Even though the Bible describes it over and over again, these people listed that's exactly the way they worship their gods. When they needed something, they needed God to go along with their plan, they were willing to kill their own children in order to get God to see things their way. That is the main reason that God told them these people need to go. Because those practices are detestable. Secular culture has told us for hundreds of years those things never happen. Tragically, archaeologists have proven now that indeed those things did happen. That was the way of worship in that area. They found burial grounds with a bunch of sheep and a bunch of children all buried together, ceremonially. That was a part of their life. That was the background of their economy, of their understanding, of their way of life, was that that needed to happen. And so God said, these people need to go. And so when you go in, you need to completely get rid of them. And he warned them, he said, because otherwise, they will convince you to do what they are doing. Remember, they are more technologically advanced. They appear smarter. They appear stronger. You're going to be drawn to their way of life and give up your way of life. And they need to go. Jesus reminds us, as he comes into the world, he was casting out demons, right? The holiness of Jesus was coming into a very unholy world, and he was literally blowing them away. Evil had to leave his presence. And people said, you're doing that because you have the power of the devil. And he said, no, a house divided against itself will not stand. That's what God is telling his people, not to be divided against themselves. Think about this, apply it to our own life. What is there in our life, in our promised land, that needs to go? That might trap us into some old way of life, that might trap us into some unhelpful habits. We need to get rid of those things completely. If there are temptations, we need to do away with them, just as God was doing here as they went into the promised land. He did not want them to take on the lifestyle, the people that were around them. How did all these things happen? How does this weak band of wandering Israelites come in and take over fortified cities that are full of incredible technology compared to theirs? How does that take place? How do we overcome the giants in our life? Maybe one of the things we need to get rid of is fear. Maybe it's some giant that seems greater than us and we can't overcome it. Well, there was a technology for that too. God called it encircling things in prayer. God gave some pretty interesting battle techniques to his people. He said, the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have delivered Jericho into your hands, along with its king and its fighting men. Here's the strategy. March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Just march around outside. Once around every day. He says, do this for 6 days. He says, have 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark. All right, so this is something done prayerfully. They have the Ark of the Covenant with them. The sign of God's presence is traveling around with them. And he says, on the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing the trumpets. When you hear the sound, a long blast on the trumpets after the 7th time around, have the whole army give a loud shout. And he says, and the wall of the city will collapse and the army will go up, everyone straight in. If any of you serve in the military, I don't think this is one of the tactics that you used. It doesn't seem to make any sense, does it? Right? They have to catch something on Jericho on the Discovery Channel. They're going to talk about how, well, maybe as they walked around over and over again, it caused some seismic activity and there was an earthquake that they had caused by doing that and caused the walls to fall down. Because the interesting thing about Jericho is that the walls didn't fall in like happens when you lay siege to a city and you knock the walls down. The walls of Jericho fell outwards, so their people were completely exposed. Amazing. How does that take place? The purpose of that is to show that it's not man's ability, it's not Joshua's leadership skills, it's not their military might that caused it. It is God who gave them the victory of that as those walls fell down outwards. You see, it's a reminder that if God is behind something, if he calls us something, it is bigger than ourselves. We may not have the answers. We may not have the know-how. We may not understand how all those things are going to happen. But that instead, he's called us to something bigger. He calls us to active prayer. He says that's the only way it's going to happen. I was reminded by one of our own people, Lindsay Dixon, runs a great dance studio over in Chino. And the whole thing exists, it appears from a human standpoint, at the human discretion of the man who owns the property where it is. And he is aging, and she was explaining to me the other day that, you know, there's some concern what's going to happen next. And yet very faithfully is entrusting that to God. He has the next chapter. He knows what's going to take place. And it appears that some other people that God has raised up are coming along to continue support for that. We look at ourselves as a church. How is it that we move forward? You know, we encounter different difficulties and problems. A couple weeks ago, our problem was power. Over and over again, our power for a long time, a problem has been that our trailer that we bring to church here is getting very, very heavy. It's quite challenging. And today is the first Sunday a full trailer will not leave this place. But the school has allowed us to store all of our stuff here on site. Pretty amazing the way God's opening. That's pretty praiseworthy, right? Especially the guys that drive. They're really excited about that, right? We still have to set up. So advertisement for the setup crew. We still need setup crew. You don't have to be strong. You just have to pray. And you can be on the setup crew. All right, but amazing how God opens those doors for us. As we look forward, we have a group of people who are working on what is the next step for us as a church. A big part of that is prayerfully looking at what are the opportunities. Is there something we are not seeing because looking for human eyes that God is doing for us? Think about the support we've received from other places. All right, when something is bigger than us, we have to have more trust in God. That's the key ingredient. That's what Joshua displayed to his people. Joshua didn't have trust in his own prowess. Joshua didn't go, well, you know, I was part of the defeating the Amalekites. I know a lot about war. Joshua said, I've seen a lot. I've seen God do a lot. And I'm excited to see the next thing he is going to do with us. Would you join me? See, that's the question he asked to them. And amazing, the example he gives to us as they encircle that city once a day for 6 days and then seven times. They got a long walk, right? They should be worn out when the battle begins. And yet they seem to be fresh. Amazing. Almost 200 years ago in this country, there was something called the Great Awakening. When all of a sudden, a country that was becoming a very secular place, there was a huge rebirth of interest in Jesus Christ. People were having tent revivals all over the place. And there was a man named Edward Payson who was kind of at the heart of that. And was one of the people who spurred that, at least from a human perspective, beginning. And here's something that was written about him. Right, he was a minister during the Second Great Awakening. It said he was said to have worn grooves in the wood floors of his house because he walked around praying. Think about that. How often do we walk around maybe pacing in fear? And instead we can bow our heads, we can pray to God and ask him to be the one who gives wisdom and guidance to us. For those of you who are a part of Assess in Advance, we had a part during both of those times to go out and walk around our community and pray that God would open our eyes, pray that he would bring a change into our community. Not just to pray at home, but to get up and to walk around. And spoiler alert, yes, today we're going to have an active prayer time to get up and walk around, do some marching of our own, to follow in those footsteps. But you know, the goal of all these things was for God's people to enter a time of rest. For God to show them that indeed he kept his promises even when they were challenged to keep their promises to him. Tragically, the book of Joshua does not record one faithful act after another. It records faithful acts, and it records failures of faith, and it records God's graciousness and more faithful acts to come. But even in that, we're reminded it didn't last forever, did it? Tragically, it didn't last. Next, you're going to hear about the judges who came along every time that there was a problem for Israel because they had fallen away from the Lord. And we struggle to trust in him. We're reminded that even Joshua, as great as a man he was, wasn't perfect. But you see, Joshua was a sign of something to come. In Hebrew, Joshua's name is Yeshua. In Hebrew, Jesus' name is Yeshua. Did you know that? It's the same name. Right? In Hebrew, right, people would now call Jesus Joshua. But Jesus is the Greek version of that same name. Joshua foretells for us the coming of Jesus in many ways. Right? Joshua was in the desert for 40 years, and Jesus was in the desert for 40 days. Joshua was a slave and grew up in Egypt. Jesus moved to Egypt before he was 2 years old and didn't come back until things were safe. And when he came back to the promised land, he came to clear it out, to clear a way for us and to lead us to an even better promised land. One that wouldn't last for a couple hundred years, but that would last for eternity. One that was given to us, not because we're faithful or because we follow or we do everything we're supposed to do or we're exactly the kind of soldiers God is looking for, but a promised land given to us because our God is faithful and loves and cares for us. The book of Hebrews, which oddly enough is in the New Testament, is a great way for us to understand the Old Testament, is to read this book of the Hebrews, New Testament. It explains for us what God was doing, preparing the world for Jesus. In the book of Hebrews, it says this: "For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken later about another day, about a promise of rest." He says, "There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his." He says, "Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest." Not the rest Joshua gave those people once they had conquered the promised land, but the rest Jesus has given to us eternally. Because by giving his life for us on the cross, he has conquered heaven, the promised land, in order to give that to us. And he says, so that no one would perish by following the example of disobedience. Remember, the reason Joshua went into that place was to rout out all the temptations of disobedience. God comes into our heart. He desires to clear it out, that we too may have room for him to reign and to rule in our hearts today, tomorrow, and forever.